You're listening to the Reinvest Podcast, where each Tuesday we will show you how to reclaim, reconnect, and refocus your life by bringing you the top real estate professionals in the industry. We'll pull back the curtain so you can implement these tools and tactics to build generational wealth. Your hosts, Garrett Gatton and Seth Simonillo. What's up, guys? Welcome to the Reinvest Podcast, episode number 68. We're well into the new year. I can't say well.
There's so much snow right now. That's the best way to put it. So
yeah,
we're getting bombarded.
It's been brutal in Ohio here. We got somebody from Indianapolis today. But before we introduce our guest, I would like to say that Seth and I are planning on working through an intention journal.
Correct. The Brandon Turner Intention Journal.
Which I did last year, liked it so much that I'm going to do it again this year. But I want to challenge you guys. Everybody kind of has their own way maybe of doing an end of the year review or something coming up for the next year, how to gear up, what are those goals, how you're going to get tactical and actually achieve those things. So I'll throw that in the link if you're looking for a good journal or system to kind of create some good habits and get focused on goals for the next year.
And essentially, it's a daily kind of front of mind goal tracker. So you write down your goals every day and it helps keep your goals front of mind and the steps to get to your end goals. So it's an everyday thing, but that's essentially, it's accountability. It's keeping yourself accountable.
Yeah. We're going to start a hashtag. Accountability sucks.
Yeah. I thrive on a lack of accountability, but here we are having accountability set in place. So
I know. Once I said it on the show, I was like, now we're really committed to do it. So that's how it works. But
All right.
We're going to get in here and we're going to introduce our guest. So people know you as Cam, but that's not your full name, is it, Cam?
It is not. My full name's actually Campion, and there's very few people that have that name that I'm aware of. Most of the time it's Cameron or an offshoot. I was actually named after my uncle who was 6 years old when I was born because my father wanted to name me Willie Joe Namath. After Willie Joe, and my mom said no, so they came up with Campion Joseph, and here I am.
So where's that name come from? I mean, Campion, I mean, it sounds really unique.
It's English and Australian. My grandmother was Australian. My grandfather met her during the war over there, and then they came back here, and it's very unique. Even after her living here for 40 or 50 years before she passed a few years ago, she still had the Australian accent.
Wow. Pretty cool. Wow.
That is cool.
It's like Champion, but they dropped the H.
That's correct. And that's what I have to tell people quite a bit. I'm like, if you want to know how to spell it, put the H in there and take it back out.
Well, that's awesome. So Cam, you're CPA out of Indianapolis, CJE and Associates. Give us a little context to your company, how long you've been in the tax realm, helping real estate investors save money and grow their wealth.
Right. So I've been in the tax, or what you would say tax and consulting, for 32 years since I was 20. I went to Miami of Ohio and interned for a couple firms in Dayton, Ohio, before I moved to Indianapolis in 1995. Worked for some small size firms, 35 to 40 people. And that's when I got started in the whole real estate side of things. As a young tax person, they just throw you into the fire, basically. Right. They feed you to the sharks, and you got to figure out if you like it and what you want to do. And one of the things I got involved in was we had several clients at the time, and this was before bonus depreciation and everything, where they were trying to figure out how can we better depreciate our commercial property and stuff. And I was like, oh, this is sort of cool. You're 24 or 25 years old. You never get taught any of that stuff in school.
Right.
And the next thing you know, you're out there trying to help the client figure out, wow, I can save you quite a bit of money doing this. And then it's just grown from there. I worked for other firms out of my 32-year career for 23, 24 years. And then in 2016, I started CJE and Associates and went on my own to have my own practice. And what that's allowed me to do, I was doing a lot of everything when I worked for others. Now I'm focusing on a large chunk is real estate, but small businesses. And that can be anybody, but those owners and entrepreneurs that are going out on their own, like myself.
Yeah.
I understand what they're going into. Let's see if we can't help each other out. And I'm glad I did.
Yeah, that's awesome.
There's a lot of crossover between small business owners and real estate. You know, essentially the good real estate investors run their portfolios like a business. So I think there's probably a lot of crossover in how you're able to help both of those kind of sections of clients that way. Help us understand, and this is just me trying to understand the tax realm. It seems to me that there are accountants, CPAs, that everybody, like, you're competent in real estate, but then there's those who focus on real estate or actually like it. So, like, what's the difference between those two types of tax consultants?
Without putting down other CPAs.
Right. And that's not, yeah, it's not the goal.
Right. No, but what it is, a lot of accountants and CPAs by their very nature are conservative. Okay. As you can tell by looking at me, I don't exactly look like I'm a conservative person. It's a matter of just being comfortable with what the rules are. And that's really not just real estate. It's here's what the government has said the rules are. Here's what they said you're able to do. You communicate it to your clients. You let the client, whether it's in real estate or small business, if the client has the education on what they have to do to achieve a goal, then the client's going to make the decision, not you as the accountant. And too many accountants or CPAs are so afraid of the tax man or the IRS auditing them that they don't want to let clients do stuff. That's not my approach. My approach is, if we have the documentation and ammunition and education to take it, we might be being aggressive, but we have the backup that can help us achieve our goal. And that is the single biggest thing in real estate, is people are scared. Other accountants and CPAs are scared of the possible audit. It doesn't scare me at all.
So talking to some other CPAs who are more aggressive or just more comfortable with some of the policies are in place, you know, the tax code and using those benefits. Sometimes it's not, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's not that there's something clear like this is tax code X, but it's actually, you're looking at case law. You're looking at past.
Correct.
And so there's some ambiguity there where some of those accountants are like, okay, yeah, there was a court ruling, you know, on this tax issue in favor of what you're talking about, but it's not in the code. Therefore, we're not going to practice or endorse that.
That's exactly correct. And again, that's not just in the real estate arena. There's literally thousands and thousands of cases that apply to things that you could apply to something in real estate or apply to something in small business. It's a matter of understanding what was that ruling for somebody getting audited or somebody going to tax court. What was that ruling about? Like, why were they allowing a deduction? Why were they not allowing a deduction? And then that's what you use to argue if you are ever audited.
Right. Right. And there's a level of confidence that you have to have to, if you were to get in a situation like that. So that's helpful. Thank you for kind of pulling the curtain back, because I've always wondered that. And I think a lot of other investors have felt maybe that frustration about not getting a clarity of, like, why is my friend over here and his CPA able to do this, but you're telling me I can't? But there's no clear reason as to why I can't. And so you've helped us with that. So one of our main topics, first of all, I'd like to say that you, even though you're in Indianapolis, you are a Buckeye still.
Correct.
At heart. So
yes,
you bleed red. You always bleed red.
Correct.
And so that's really why we have you on
and
the show.
And you're originally from Ohio then?
I'm a Dayton, Ohio. And Dayton, I grew up going to Ohio State games since I was 4 years old with my grandfather. He'd alternate taking myself and my brother, and I've done the same thing with my kids. Even though we live over here, we usually go to a couple games a year.
Represent.
There was only one time we brought on somebody who endorsed Michigan, and that was to publicly haze them. And it was, no, I'm just kidding. We didn't. We wouldn't do
they
that.
They should never be allowed on your show.
So you from Ohio, Indianapolis, been doing this for a long time. One of the things we're going to jump in today and hopefully help our listeners understand better is something called the real estate professional designation. So before we dive into the nuts and bolts of what that is, why that could be advantageous for somebody in real estate, give us kind of a down and dirty laundry list of why, like what are real estate tax benefits? And then that'll kind of help us segue into this real estate professional designation.
Well, generally speaking, on the real estate side of things, everybody has now recently heard about cost segs, bonus depreciation, and such. And you've got an asset that initially doesn't generally make any money. Okay. I mean, on paper, because of depreciation and expenses and fixing it up your first few years, it's not making any money, but the value of the property itself is growing in value. And so one of the benefits you have, whether you're a passive investor or a real estate professional, is the first few years you're generating losses. Depending on your level of income, if you're a passive investor and not a real estate professional, you're offsetting your income at that level. If you make a significant income, basically over $150,000, and you're a passive investor, you don't get to take those current losses. But once you start generating income for those investments, you're not paying tax either because you've carried forward the losses. Mm-hmm. So there is a benefit out there for the passive investor. The real estate professional investor benefits when usually in a husband, wife, or a married couple is when one of the spouses is a real estate professional. Why? Because you're going to get to offset their W-2 income and everything else they're doing. And it's not just W-2 income.
So let me back up just a little bit, because you're hitting on some really good stuff. So kind of at a high level is the depreciation side of things, which is this kind of phantom expense the government allows you to take against your income. And one thing I think needs to be clarified, because I didn't understand this when I first started, was I always heard, oh, get into real estate, it's going to help you offset your income. But really, there's two categories of income. There's active income and passive income. And so can you kind of like maybe dispel that initial misnomer that you can just go buy a piece of real estate and then it's going to help you not pay taxes on your W-2 job that you're going to make $150,000 a year in?
That is the single biggest thing where people screw up not talking to their accountant or talking to somebody. So there's a baseline rule. The assumption is that real estate income is passive. That's the assumption off the bat by the IRS. If you make under $100,000 and you're invested in real estate, you're going to get to take whatever losses you have against your other income. That's just the rules. If you make between 100 and 150, it starts to get phased out. Once you make over 150, doesn't matter if you're single or married, you start losing those benefits of having paper losses, I guess is what we'll call them, on your tax return. So if you're somebody that makes 250 grand and you have a few rental properties or you're invested in real estate, you're not getting to take that against your current income. You have to wait till you have other sources of passive income, which could also be interest and dividends, but generally it's other rental income that you're invested in to use those losses. So what everybody thinks is, oh, you can do this, you know, go spend money, you can get a write-off. Well, yeah, maybe. And frankly, the way the rules are written, let's think about it, guys. $100,000 to $150,000 is a decent living, right?
Yeah.
But you're not exactly in a very high tax bracket. It's usually your effective rate's about 18%. You start making $250,000, $300,000, $350,000 at one of the spouses, and then the other one's involved in real estate. Now you're talking real dollars that you're saving. And when the real estate professional makes sense to start worrying about at that lower income levels, who cares if you get to write it off? You're not saving that much money, even if you can. You'd prefer to write it off, you know, as you make more money, unless, and I know we'll get into this, unless you are a real estate professional and you're leveraging yourself to continue to grow. So by leveraging yourself and not having to pay the taxes because you're leveraging yourself, you're growing your portfolio. And one of the biggest things, not to be political or anything, is I call a lot of my real estate professionals, I call them Trump or Trump Jr. because, and again, the biggest thing is the common person doesn't understand the rules. They think that people, a lot of people think Trump is breaking the law. He's just using the rules that the IRS has out there to his advantage. Well, those same rules apply to people that aren't Donald Trump.
Which BTW, the government currently,
they want you to pay taxes.
Well, but they like it for you to own real estate. Like real estate is seen as like there are not even loopholes. There's just tax code that's favorable towards people to own real estate. And that is a good thing. That's why we're even having this conversation. So
could you break down what is a real estate professional designation? How do you get that? I have that designation and I don't even know. So this is for me. This is we're getting some consulting going on right here.
No problem, Seth. I'll send you a bill later. The very first thing that you have to have, if it's your only job, if that's all you do in the real estate arena is whether you work for a brokerage, whether you're a realtor, whether you manage a bunch of properties, is you have to have at least 750 hours. That's the very first thing that you have to have. Now, if you're somebody, let's say you're somebody that has 10 properties or something, if you don't make the proper election, you have to have 750 hours for every single property. So it's very important to have an accountant or a CPA that knows you need to make an election to combine all 10 properties. And that way you only have to have 750 in total.
Dude, that's a really small mistake that would have a big outcome.
And I will talk about that in a bit of that's what happened to one of my clients. So the starting point's the 750 hours.
Which is about like 15 hours a week. That's what I
About 15 hours a week. Exactly. Okay. So it's not a lot. Now, where people run into trouble is let's just say you're a married couple, but only one of the spouse works. And let's say they have a W-2 job, but are also heavily involved in real estate. Mm-hmm. Not only do you have to have 750 hours, you have to have 1 hour more than your other job. So if you worked 1,000 hours in a W-2 job and only had 980 as a real estate professional, you're not a real estate professional. It's still considered passive because that's just one of the rules that they have out there. And pretty much almost anything you do in the real estate arena does qualify for those hours, like managing the property, paying the bills, doing the accounting, going out and looking at the properties. I mean, the list is pretty endless of what qualifies to get to those 750 hours, but many people don't document very well, and then that also gets them in trouble.
So you've alluded to this, and let me back up real quick. So that's real who quick, can
let
get
me
it.
Make sure that didn't stop the recording here.
Oh, okay.
Hang on
one second, Cam. We've got a
no problem
technical verification on our end.
Not a problem at all.
We good?
Go ahead. Yep.
So that kind of gets into who can get it. What is it? It essentially, my understanding, right, is it allows you to create a bridge between passive losses and offsetting active income. Is that, would you say it that way or how would you communicate what
it is? No, I wouldn't say it that way. The real estate professional designation allows you to take losses, if you have losses generated in the real estate arena, like basically against any other income you make.
Any other income.
Yes. It's not just wages. It could be if you were a super rich person and had $200,000 worth of dividends and $1 million W-2, but you somehow claimed real estate professional and you qualified, you can offset all that income with those losses.
What is the limit to how much of those losses you can bring over to offset any other type of income?
Without getting too technical, it's pretty much limitless, because say you had $200,000 in other income and you had a $400,000 loss and you were a real estate professional. You'd obviously use $200,000 to offset the other $200,000. The remaining $200,000 would carry forward as a net operating loss on your if this was flow through entity type things into your personal return. So you'd have that going forward to the following year. There are some rules about with interest involved that can limit somewhat of what you can carry forward. But for the common person, you pretty much can carry forward whatever you don't use.
That's so crazy.
That is crazy. I thought there was a limit on how much you could carry forward and how much you could apply in one single year. There's no limit.
No. Wow. And again, I bring up Trump again, but I've looked at his tax returns because they're public record, at least the ones that they've put out there. That's how he didn't pay tax in some years. Right. He'd have $22 million worth of income, but because of what he did, this is something I should bring up too. I keep bringing up W-2 income and real estate professional, is you can be a W-2 person and a real estate professional. That's pretty much what Trump is. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so all those losses from the Trump Towers and everything that he did. Now, let's make the assumption that they did the proper cost segs and this, that, and the other. That's why he was able to use $27 million worth of losses against a $22 million W-2 because he qualified.
That's wild. So, okay. Let me talk really quickly about how a spouse could potentially help a couple get that designation when one of them is working and maybe they're not going to be able to meet the qualifications individually, but they could as a couple. And then I want to tie this whole thing together in kind of like this hypothetical case study of how somebody could use these things collectively.
Sure.
So what would be, you alluded to this earlier from a spouse perspective, you help clients kind of, you spun that scenario. One of them works. Maybe they individually aren't going to split 50% of their time or have 1 hour more contributed to real estate versus their business or W-2. So is the spouse able to have the designation that would apply to both of them?
Surprisingly so. You would think the government wouldn't allow this. So obviously a single person this doesn't apply to. But in a married couple, only one of the two has to qualify. So as long as one qualifies as a real estate professional and meets all the rules and regulations, that anything that's generated, even if there's income that the husband only or wife only invests in, you still qualify.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
And that is huge, because if you think about it, one of the spouses is going to probably be working full time doing a job. Right. I mean, that's how they're paying their bills. A lot of people get involved in real estate, again, to leverage themselves, grow their wealth through appreciation and assets. Well, if that other spouse can follow the rules and also try to generate income, but is following the rules, well, now you're starting to invest in all these things. Now you're getting the advantage of basically the losses to take against that other income.
So,
and by the way, it's not always, here's the thing. We're talking about real estate professional. Oh, great. You get to take all these losses. Don't get lost in the fact that generally you're not in things to lose money. You're trying to make money.
Right,
and most of these things you get involved in eventually are going to start making money. You are going to start paying taxes down the road.
Right.
It all depends on what your goal is and what you're trying to build for yourself.
So let me kick this scenario out at you. Let's say a husband and a wife, the husband works full time, that they have 10 or 20 units.
Okay.
And the wife, all she does is kind of manage those units, you know, helps with some of the turns or the cleaning or the, you know, screening tenants. And she's spending 15 hours a week doing that. Could she record that time and qualify for the real estate professional designation, or because it's just part of owning properties, it's not really a job per se, she can't.
No, she could, because you'd be taking, at least I would be taking the position that she's managing those properties. Because if you, now, obviously, if you hire a property management company,
right,
a chance in hockey sticks. But if you are basically the property management company yourself in the situation you gave, as long as she was documenting what she was doing and she got to the 750 hours, she would qualify.
Mm-hmm. How have you seen your clients document their time? Have you had any clients that are on the bubble so they document their time just to make sure they qualify? Do you see people like clocking in themselves on an app or something? Or so what's kind of the accountability?
I tell my clients, how hard is it to use Excel and record what you're doing? As soon as you, and I have a template that I'll give to them. It's not it, with all the different types of duties. They literally have to add the dates in there and put the number of hours that they worked and did that duty. Now, what ends up happening a lot of times is I do have several clients that have other jobs and want, and one of the spouses doesn't work, doesn't do anything, and they still want to try to claim real estate professional. I go, guys, there's only 24 hours in the day. Okay. So you do the math of 24 hours in the day, you know, what that equates to. How are you trying to tell me you work 2,000 hours in a W-2 job and you work 2,400 in this and you have three young kids? Like, so there will be pushback. And that's where my knowledge of, guys, great, you're not getting the write-off right now. But let's say you've accumulated $100,000 worth of losses and you sell these properties 3 years from now with a $500,000 gain. Well, you're not, the gain is taxed at a preferential rate. However, that ordinary loss in that had accumulated over time gets to offset your income. So if you still have your W-2 income, and now you got $100,000 and you're making $350,000, you just saved yourself 30% down the line. So it's, everybody wants immediate gratification. That's great. But every situation is different. And so I try to preach to the clients, let's look at what you're trying to do. Let's look at the long term in terms of, instead of just worrying about, oh, I get to save $10,000.
Right. And that is the difference between being proactive and reactive, right? There's like, hey, what business did you do this last year? Let's file your taxes. And then there's, what do you plan on doing? Where are you going? And how do we position you to now, you know, proactively? We could spend a lot of time kind of walking through different scenarios that way, but my brain's kind of turning in terms of helping, if you're listening to this, helping, you know, you as a listener, kind of daisy chain some of these strategies together. So for example, accelerated depreciation, right? You had alluded to the cost segregation, bonus depreciation. There are ways to accelerate depreciation on real estate, which allows you to essentially take that, have access to that sooner. Am I tracking so far? Like, did I verbalize that correctly? Okay.
Yep.
The sooner you have control of that depreciation, the sooner you can use it against income. And so, you know, if it was appropriate, you know, there may be some strategy of, I sold some properties for a gain in this calendar year, and I also probably would want to accelerate some depreciation on some of my properties so that this year I can use this designation to offset this gains that I have.
100%.
Is that kind of some of the strategy then?
You have to take advantage of it. And the real estate professional thing in that instance has really nothing to do with it. It's just a matter of knowing your client's situation, knowing what type of income and what type of depreciation recapture on any sales could happen, and then the other things you're involved in. Now, one point I will make that we haven't even brought up for your listeners is the cost segregations usually get done on commercial property as well as, I call them apartment complexes or multifamily units.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the cost segregations are done. Generally speaking, on single family homes, you will very rarely see a cost segregation done. What happens there is generally people are playing loose and fast with what they feel is property that qualifies for it. It's just not cost effective on a, say, $400,000 house to try to do a cost seg. Usually what people will end up doing is, you know, furniture and fixtures, they'll write off or take bonus depreciation on, but the rest of the house is over the longer period of term. But being able to understand what's going on and what is down the road can help you make a decision.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So if you're real quick, right before we move on, if you are not a, have, if you do not have a real estate professional designation, is there a limit to how, like, how much of the losses transfer over to the next calendar year?
No, I mean, the first place, when I say no, let's start. If you're not a real estate professional and you have a gain on the sale of one of your properties, 100 grand, okay? And you're also invested in other things and you have $150,000 worth of losses, you will get 100 of those losses against the 100 in gain, and that remaining 50, assuming you make over 150 with your other income, would carry forward. So on, if you're a passive investor, you can only use losses up to the passive income. Any remaining losses that are passive carry forward, but there's not a limit.
Okay. So I thought, though, that like capital gains was taxed at your ordinary income bracket, but it's considered passive income?
No. The capital gains are, if they're short term, they're taxed at your ordinary income bracket. If they're long term, so over a year, so a year and one day, depending on the tax bracket you're in, it's 0, 15, 20, or with the Obamacare tax, 23.8 on the federal side of things.
Oh, and so your losses can offset your capital gains?
The passive loss.
Sorry, we're asking you a lot.
I mean,
of
now
questions.
We're getting into the technical side of things. So let me throw out there for you guys. Normally, I'm writing this all up for clients. Let's say client A makes a $200,000 W-2. Mm-hmm. Okay, so and they're a passive investor. So we know that they can't take, if they have no passive income, they can't take any of their passive losses.
Right.
So they make 200 grand. Let's say they have $100,000 gain
from the sale of a property. Yep.
But let's also say they have $150,000 loss from some other investments in real estate.
Yeah.
So what happens here is it's really unique, and this is where the expertise of an accountant that understands the tax rules comes into play, that $150,000 loss, he'll be able to use $100,000 of it because he has $100,000 in passive income.
Right.
But take a guess where that $100,000 gets applied first. It gets applied against his W-2 income in terms of how the tax calculation works.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. So in this particular example, and the remaining 50 would carry forward. So I said 200 W-2, $100,000 gain, $150,000 loss. He's going to end up having $200,000 in income. 100 is going to be ordinary, mm-hmm. W-2. 100 is going to be capital gain. He's paying less tax. It's just the way that the law is written. A lot of people don't realize that. You are using against passive income, but the way the calculation plays out, it's actually working in your favor.
Wow.
Interesting. Okay. We're going to jump into our smaller pocket segment. So, Cam, go ahead and tell us about a deal that went wrong and what happened. What did you learn from it? And that way our listeners can avoid the same mistake.
Well, this is going to sound sort of cocky. I didn't learn anything. My client didn't listen to me. And this was an instance, I wouldn't say it was a friend, it was an associate about 10 years ago that I met that always was picking my brains on things, trying to figure out what was going on and everything.
The proverbial brain pick.
Yes. Yep. Hey, got a quick question. Hey, can you help me out? Eventually became a client and everything. liked to push the envelope. No problem there. I have a theory called the pig hog theory. Pigs get eaten, hogs get slaughtered. I won't let my clients be hogs. And this factors into this story because in his instance, he had a W-2 job, made a significant amount of money, about $400,000 or $500,000 a year.
Nice.
He also did truly own a boatload of real estate. Okay. It doesn't matter how he had all the money or the leverage to do this. He just was able to do it. And explain to him, hey, here's what the rules are regarding the 750 hours. Told him he was married. Hey, the easiest thing to do would have your wife take over all these duties and everything. He didn't like that idea. I said, fine. So I said, you're going to have to be able to show the 750 hours. You're also, if you ever get audited, you're going to have to show them, because his job was much like mine. I'm the owner of my own business, so I control my schedule, right? Okay. Regardless of what I make for a living, doesn't mean I necessarily work 2,000 hours a year. Right. Now, some of my clients hear this podcast, they're going to be like, we're getting charged too much. But this does come into play. So the you can probably guess what he did. His industry, he got paid very large fees and commissions for what he did. So you could make the case that he did 5 hours worth of work and made $75,000. Well, he assured me that he was keeping track of all his time and everything. He signed an engagement letter. And this, I did learn a lesson. He signed an engagement letter saying, I have the support. I've done this. We're claiming real estate professional. So we file his tax return. This is like actually right before the market and everything crashed in 07 or 08. So it was 15 years ago. He saved probably $75,000 to $100,000.
Wow.
The biggest problem was, though, he then got audited because of his other income that he made. He got audited. They didn't like some of his support there. So they decided, we're going to take a look at other side of things on the real estate professional. So what got him caught, so to say, was his crappy record keeping for his other business and his crappy record keeping
there was a pattern
for the
there.
Real estate side of things. They divulged together, and ultimately what the IRS did, they kicked out deductions on his other business and on this business. Now, he eventually did get to take those losses, but because it was like 3 or 4 years after the fact, he had to pay about $15,000 in penalties and interest.
Wow.
And plus the 75 back. He eventually saved the 75.
Right.
But it was all because of the documentation side of things. The single simplest thing to do is if you document it, you may not get 100% of what you want if you're ever audited, but you're going to be a heck of a lot better position. And what did that teach me? Not once since then will I allow anybody to claim real estate professional unless I have a timesheet for them or that it's so obvious because that's their only job that they do.
Right,
if there's any question, if they do something else, I'm like, you're providing me with worksheets for both or we're not doing it.
Wow. So did any of that heat come back on you because you were the CPA in that scenario?
No, because again, documentation. I had sent him memos I had the file sent to him, had it by email even back then, that you need to do A, B, C, and D. You signed this engagement letter saying you had A, B, C, and D. Again, wow. I mean, I've preached this whole podcast. If you document stuff, that's what helps you take advantage of the rules.
Yeah. Wow. Mm. That's good stuff. A painful lesson for sure, but one that can be avoided. And it's not as hard.
Avoided
as,
pretty easily.
Also, the biggest lesson is don't lie. So if you're not a real estate professional designation, not saying that this guy lied, but If you're not, you're just not. So sorry.
Yeah. So figure out how you can. Yeah.
Figure out how you can. Yeah. Use the wife hack or the spouse hack.
That, some of these that people are like, their goal for 2024, find spouse. Step two, hire spouse for 15 hours a week. Step three, save money on taxes. all right.
Well, and communicate. Communicate with your accountant. Because again, guys, sorry. I mean, I know we're focusing on the real estate professional, but there's still a ways to take advantage of the real estate rules, like we talked about with gains and losses, even if you're not a real estate professional. It's
which is stuff that we didn't know. I didn't understand the depth of some of that. So that was awesome.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. All right. We're going to go into what we call our little nugget. So Cam, this is the part of our show where you give our listeners a practical takeaway, a piece of advice, something tried and true that they can implement to their real estate investing businesses.
Simply put, people, communicate with your advisors, not just your accountant, all advisors that you have involved with you. Make sure they communicate with each other, because if one arm doesn't know what the other arm's doing, you're going to be in trouble. And document what you're trying to do. By doing each one of those things, everybody's working together instead of one person suggesting one thing, another person suggesting something else. If you're working in unison, you're going to be able to achieve the best results for yourself.
That's good.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it's there are a lot of apps. I mean, I use like Mile Tracker. I mean, different things that are important that have real tangible value that don't require that much more time and energy.
Correct.
And if you're going to be successful in business, you're going to have discipline anyway. So just kind of, you know, better embrace it because it has real value to your business. So good advice there. Okay. In closing here, what's been one of the best resources for you? Could be in the way that you help your clients from a professional perspective or just a personal growth. What's been the biggest resource?
You mean what has helped me achieve what I've done or?
Yeah.
It started with one of the firms I first worked for here in Indianapolis. I had a mentor that was relentless with me when it came time to defend a position that we were taking for a client, not just in real estate. Mm. It was, this is how you do the research. This is how you document it. This is how you argue against the IRS. And I worked for that firm for 14 years. We had five or six audits, large audits, that I, as like a 25, 26, 27-year-old, was put in charge of getting all the documentation and then the case rulings or whatever to argue that our position was correct. And learning how to do that and what sources within the IRS code have higher weight, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Knowing that has helped me feel more comfortable. You know, we're talking about real estate here. It's why I'm not scared about the real estate. I know how to do the research. I know what the rules are. So I know how to educate my clients to be able to achieve their goals.
Yes.
Did the firm you worked for win all those audits?
I would say yes. I mean, there were times where the client obviously had to pay some money.
Right.
But we had one specific client that an auditor audited 4 years, wanted the client to pay $4.2 million. The audit took 2.5 years. They paid us about $175,000. And at the end of the audit, the IRS had to pay our client $75,000 in refunds because we actually didn't take all the deductions that were available to us. And that was somewhat because of a bookkeeping issue by the client. But that taught me. I was like, and I was heavily involved with this.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And took all that. I was like, at the end of the day, I'm like, man, I'm a badass. I saved the client $4.2 million because I did all the work to document
play.
It. And here's the, in that particular case, it also taught me to going into the real estate side of things before I got heavily involved, to do the research before, to understand what the rules were before I got even more involved, because then I already knew the rules. And that particular case, I didn't know the rules. I was just thrown to the wolves. The partner did. In the case of what I do now for clients, I'm generally ahead of the game, knowing what's going on. And I want to mention something before I forget for your listeners, is Congress is in the midst of more than likely changing bonus depreciation for 23, 24, and 25. Currently for 23, you only get 80% bonus depreciation through right. these cost segs. They are more than likely going to make that 100% for 23, 24, and 25. That could be actually huge for a bunch of your listeners, so they better be communicating with their advisors.
Wow. So that was kind of a byproduct of the 2017 jobs yes. and thing. But so they're going to extend that portion of that bill?
Literally today, they're doing various things voting on it. And the main reason why it's probably going to get passed.
Because it's election year? I'm just kidding.
It's teamed up with the child tax credit for lower income people, you know, right. trying to help them out. And research and development issues that wow. the accounting changed. Now, us as accountants hate this from the perspective of today is January 19th. They have to have this in place by January 29th. But did you hear what I said? It retroactively applies to 23.
Right. So people are going to try and scramble.
Well, us as accountants say extend the due date so that we can accurately decide what to do right. on all these clients. I have a particular case with a client that I'm in the midst of starting their 23 stuff. There's a boatload of bonus depreciation. Mm. An extra 20% may or may not make a difference.
Right.
Won't know, but now we have that situation that we got to look at. Well, multiply that if you have a bunch of clients
yeah.
in that same arena. Now I can't make the decision. You don't want to file quickly. So people just need to make sure they communicate with their advisors, not only on this issue, but anything else.
So, and this, I'm going to segue into this last part. We preach, you know, find somebody who is an advisor, a tax consultant, CPA, that understands the stuff that we're talking about today.
Correct. Okay?
We happen to be talking with one. All right. So, Cam, tell us, how could people seek you out, you know, get in contact with you if they have questions on the back end of this episode, or, you know, they're in need of somebody to help them with their real estate taxes or business taxes?
The easiest thing to do is I tell people to start with my email. Once I get to know them, they'll eventually use my cell phone or text. But by emailing me what their situation is, what they're thinking about doing, the timing of when they want to talk and when they want to do something is how I can best benefit them. I mean, it'd be hard to help anybody that needs help for 23 because of the timing and everything,
mm-hmm.
but that still doesn't mean I wouldn't want to talk to them just to educate them so they know what they need to do going forward.
Exactly. Now is the time to plan for the next tax year. So there's definitely a conversation to be had there. So awesome. We will put your contact information in the show notes. Hey, man, thank you so much for coming on. Always good to talk with a fellow Buckeye and
go Bucks.
Tax stuff. So that's right. Thank you.
Guys, it's been a pleasure. I really appreciate you having me on.
As always, excited that you joined us on another episode of the Reinvest Podcast. If this episode added to your tool belt or left you feeling inspired, go ahead and share it with a friend. Stay tuned every Tuesday for new episodes. And if you want to get in touch with us, go to our LinkedIn or Facebook profiles and shoot us a message. Move farther, reach higher, and grow deeper. See you next time.